Good afternoon, everyone. I'm Christine Sandy, and I'm the Program Director for the Rural Health Information Hub, and I'd like to welcome you to today's webinar. We'll be discussing the 2023 Physician Fee Schedule Update, and I'll quickly run through just a few housekeeping items before we begin. We have provided a PDF copy of the presentation on the RHI Hub website, and that's accessible through the URL that's on your screen. We'll also be sharing that link through the chat function, so you'll be able to find it there. If you have any technical issues during the webinar today, we ask that you visit the Zoom Help Center at support.zoom.us. And if you have questions for our presenters today, please submit those through the Q&A button that's on the bottom of your screen. Please do use the Q&A function rather than the chat for those questions to ensure that we don't miss your questions. We do hope to have time for those questions at the end of the webinar. And now it is my pleasure to introduce our speakers for today's webinar. Tom Morris is Associate Administrator for Rural Health Policy at the Health Resources and Services Administration, where he directs the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy. And we also have two speakers from CMS. Lindsay Baldwin is an analyst in the Center for Medicare in the Hospital and Ambulatory Policy Group, Division of Ambulatory Services. Her work is focused on behavioral health topics, including Medicare payment policy for opioid treatment programs. Chris Corwin is an analyst in CMS's Center for Medicare with the Hospital and Ambulatory Policy Group, Division of Practitioner Services. His work focuses on payment policy for telehealth, remote monitoring, and other topics related to annual updates to the Medicare Part B physician fee schedule. And with that, I'll turn it over to you, Tom.
Great. Thank you, Christine. I appreciate it very much. And thank you so much for hosting this webinar. You know, we were really pleased this year to see some of the really nice changes and clarifications that CMS made across many of its rulemaking activities, but some really stood out. I think we were really pleased to see what they did on the Rural Emergency Hospital. We're also glad to see the clarification on the critical access hospital mileage standards. And then as we move towards the physician fee schedule, we really thought it was quite noteworthy, the changes they made related to direct supervision to general supervision for a broader range of behavioral health providers, and some of the changes they made related to telehealth. And I think what we wanted to do is make sure that rural stakeholders understood these changes and what it meant. As you know, the department has had a priority on really focusing on behavioral health issues. And so the opportunity to expand the range of those mental health, behavioral health clinicians that can operate in rural communities and any community really was quite important. And we wanted to make sure folks understood that and had a chance to hear it straight from CMS. So I greatly appreciate our colleagues from CMS being willing to do this. And I also want to thank Courtney Turner of our office for really doing all the work to work with RHA Hub and our CMS colleagues to make that happen. You know, the reality is, as I look at the range of providers who will now be able to operate under general supervision, these are the behavioral health clinicians that I think are more likely to be able to be recruited to rural communities, given that we see shortages around the country. And so it really will have the potential to expand access to care and to get people regular behavioral health treatment that perhaps before was out of reach. And so we just really wanted to create a forum where CMS could talk about what they did and how they did it, and make sure if people had any questions, they had a chance to do. Similarly with the telehealth provisions, you know, we know that telehealth utilization has gone up considerably during the pandemic, thanks to the public health emergency flexibilities. And yet, even as that's going, most of it under, you know, the flexibility of the PHE, the reality is CMS has done a nice job each year of using, you know, the full range of its regulatory authority to do what it can under current statute to expand access to telehealth services. And so with that, turn it over to the experts who really can go into more detail with this. And I think Lindsay is the next speaker. So Chris, thanks again for hosting. And thank you again to our CMS colleagues for doing this.
Great. Thanks so much, Tom. Good afternoon, everyone. I'm happy to be here. As Tom mentioned, I'll start us off first with a focus on recent Medicare policy updates in the behavioral health space. So first off, I just wanted to highlight CMS's behavioral health strategy, which seeks to remove barriers to care and services and to adopt a data-informed approach to evaluate our behavioral health programs and policies. The CMS behavioral health strategy strives to support a person's whole emotional and mental well-being and promotes person-centered behavioral health care. As you'll see on the slide here, specifically, the goals of the strategy are to strengthen equity and quality in behavioral health care, improve access to substance use disorder prevention, treatment, and recovery services, ensure effective pain treatment and management, improve access to and quality of mental health care and services, and lastly, to utilize data to inform effective actions and measure impact on behavioral health. So on this next slide, we just have links to the CMS website where you can access the CMS Behavioral Health Strategy Fact Sheet, CMS's strategic plan, and other resources. So next, consistent with the goals in the CMS Behavioral Health Strategy that I just mentioned, I wanted to highlight several policies in the calendar year 2023 Medicare Physician Fee Schedule Final Rule that are aimed at expanding access to behavioral health services. First, under Incident 2, in light of the current needs among Medicare beneficiaries for improved access to behavioral health services, we considered regulatory revisions that may help to reduce existing barriers and make greater use of the services of a broader range of behavioral health professionals, which includes but is not limited to licensed professional counselors and licensed marriage and family therapists. So we finalized our proposal to add an exception to the direct supervision requirement under our Incident 2 regulation that allows behavioral health services to be provided under the general supervision of a physician or non-physician practitioner, rather than under direct supervision when these services are provided by auxiliary personnel incident to the services of a physician or non-physician practitioner. We also clarified that any service furnished primarily for the diagnosis and treatment or treatment of a mental health or substance use disorder can be furnished by auxiliary personnel under general supervision of a physician or non-physician practitioner who's authorized to furnish and bill for services provided incident to their own professional services. We note that the regulatory definition of auxiliary personnel has not changed, and so they still must meet any applicable requirements to provide incident to services, which includes licensure requirements imposed by the state in which the services are being furnished. We do believe that this change will facilitate utilization and extend the reach of behavioral health services under Medicare. Next, we also made updates to the code set describing behavioral health integration. So behavioral health integration, or BHI, is an evidence-based strategy in which behavioral health care is integrated typically into a primary care setting and has been shown to improve outcomes for millions of Americans with behavioral health conditions. CMS first began making payment for these services back in 2017 when we established coding describing the psychiatric collaborative care model, as well as what we called a general BHI code, which was meant to capture other models of integrated care. So for this year, 2023, we finalized our proposal to create a new general BHI code that describes a service personally performed by clinical psychologists or clinical social workers in order to account for monthly care integration where the services furnished by these professionals are serving as the focal point of care integration. We also finalized our proposal to allow a psychiatric diagnostic evaluation to serve as the initiating visit for this new general BHI service. And lastly, we also indicated in the final rule that we intend to address payment for new codes describing caregiver behavioral management training in CY 2024 rulemaking. And with that, I will pass it off to my colleague, Chris, to talk about Medicare telehealth. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Lindsay. Thank you to everyone attending. I'm excited to present to you today, and we're going to do some level setting up front. And based on the amount of time that we have, I don't want to spend too long setting the stage because I want to allow adequate time for questions. But the purpose of this first slide is to give context and a background and a basis of the history of the telehealth statute. And beyond what's on the slide, I want the group to conceptualize or understand that under Medicare Part B, the separately payable practitioner services that may be furnished via telehealth are aligned with three basic points. First, that there's a list of eligible telehealth practitioners, which are a subset of suppliers for Medicare purposes. Second, there's a list of eligible sites and locations for originating sites. And third, a telehealth eligible beneficiary, which is essentially a beneficiary that has a fee-for-service Part B benefit. So that's what the slide sets up. And just to underscore, the telehealth statute predates by quite a lengthy period where we're at today. So I won't spend too much time setting up what happened and how the telehealth statute structured, because with COVID flexibilities and adjustments for the public health emergency, there were several actions that Congress took to amend the statute. And I think that's important for this group because many of those do relate to behavioral health. So we'll go over those today. And just as a final point before I move to the next slide, and we may come back here during Q&A, but the statute also sets up a process for adding and removing services to the telehealth list. And so next slide, please. So again, this slide just sets up the context of pre and then early PHE. And very soon after the public health emergency, there were a number of changes made. But again, as was framed up earlier in the intro to this presentation, we've seen a significant uptick in telehealth services, and in part due to the necessity of needing to furnish more services virtually, and in part because of some of the flexibilities that we implemented. And as I referenced earlier, the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2021 was a piece of legislation that Congress enacted that did a number of things, but what's important for this group to understand is that it allowed for less restrictions in three major ways, those groups that I set up earlier. So first of all, there was a broader range of services that could be furnished. There were fewer restrictions on site of service, and also an ability for CMS to go a bit further with services that we're offering. So, and to Lindsay's point earlier, she framed up some behavioral health considerations with virtual supervision. We have a concept or a construct of virtual direct supervision. And again, as the slide clearly states, for the duration of the public health emergency to limit infection exposure, we revised the definition of direct supervision to include virtual availability of the supervising physician or practitioner. So it still requires use of synchronous communication, that's audio, video, real-time communications technology as it's defined in regulation. What I want the group to take home or take away is that for purposes of calendar year 2023, this policy remains in place, and there was a lot of learning that happened about what types of services both could be furnished via telehealth, but also what an appropriate level of supervision is for services. And so another point is that direct supervision or virtual direct supervision, it's a floor in terms of safety, not a ceiling. So there may be certain circumstances where patient safety or other considerations would call for closer supervision. But really what this means in effect is that the practitioner who's providing direct supervision need not be in the same room, need not be in the same location. And further, they merely need to be immediately available to give real-time assistance to the auxiliary staff providing the services. And Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2022 was an extension of many of the flexibilities that the CAA 2021 implemented. And I think the key takeaway for the group, without getting too far into the weeds here, is that Congress establishes an extension period, because as I referenced, the telehealth statute requires and restricts eligible telehealth practitioners, eligible services, and eligible sites, originating sites for provision of these services. So in effect, what Congress did was allowed an extension of 151 days. And specifically, that meant that there would be a period whereby providers and suppliers of services would have adequate notice of transitioning away from the public health emergency. And now we're going to get into two parts in a summary of this year's rulemaking. So I described that there's a process by which CMS considers adds and removals of certain services. We also had certain services on the list that were established on a category 3 basis, which was a temporary category that was implemented in 2021 so CMS could understand whether or not certain telehealth services that weren't initially on the list, but due to the public health emergency for COVID-19, may have some clinical benefit. And there's sometimes a lag in evidence available because many of these services weren't offered because of the restrictions for telehealth prior to the public health emergency. So in that learning, we had several rounds of public comment, and we considered the feedback from the public on a variety of services. And in some regards, the telehealth flexibilities that are in place during the PHE, CMS only has certain flexibility to go so far. So where we could or where it made sense based on public comment and within our regulatory authority, but we have category 3 services that will be available through calendar year 2023. But however, back to the transition period that I shared earlier with the CA 2022, certain flexibilities will no longer be available when the PHE ends. And because of that, certain services will have to come off the telehealth list. But to that point, this also ties into where services are being delivered. And so we also finalized that for Medicare telehealth services, we're going to continue to make payment with the place of service code that it had the service been furnished in person. And that allows payments to continue to be made at the non-facility based rate for Medicare telehealth services through the latter of the calendar year 2023. Or the end of the calendar year in which the PHE ends. So that's important to note that payment will be as it sits right now for the PHE. Next slide, please. And the next slide just gives a bit more context. We did add certain services to the Medicare telehealth list for the first time, and those include prolonged services and chronic pain management. I'll send some links out in the chat as we get into the Q&A so folks may dive into the rule or find the list as well. But we post and go through discussion and consideration of how we garnered input and public comment feedback about services. And additionally, I'll note that we also accept submissions on an annual basis for additions to the list. So there are multiple ways that CMS considers what to add to the telehealth list. And I spent some time earlier up front describing the flexibilities related to direct supervision, which remain in place for calendar year 2023. And so as I framed up with the Consolidated Appropriations Act of 2022, certain flexibilities will end after the transition period. And that means that certain geographic and site of service restrictions will again take effect. However, from a substance use disorder and mental health standpoint, those services will be available in certain sites that were originally excluded, and that includes the patient's home. Another point that I want to emphasize here, for any service that's on the telehealth list and when the service is being furnished to an eligible beneficiary for the ongoing treatment or management of a mental health or substance use disorder, that service may be furnished audio only. That comes into play because there may be circumstances where audio only services are no longer available, and that's tied into restrictions inherent with the telehealth statute and what may be a telehealth service. The requirements are such that in order to add something to the telehealth list, CMS's threshold question is whether or not it's a substitute for an in-person service. So again, we have some nuanced flexibilities that we can get into, but if the service itself is not a substitute for an in-person service, the elements of the service, that is, then it's not appropriate and it's not considered a telehealth service for the purposes of Medicare Part B. However, there are a variety of related services that leverage communications-based technology. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking purely about formalistically the Medicare telehealth services. I mentioned place of service codes. Most importantly, we'll still allow the place of service code had the service been furnished in person until the later of 2023 or the year in which the PHE ends. So what that means again is that payment stays the same. And I think I've covered all the bullets on this slide, so we can go to the next slide. All right. And just briefly, for context, I just gave the group a rundown of how, for purposes of the physician fee schedule, telehealth services are defined, but there's also some regulatory changes regarding the use of telecommunications in other contexts. So we also finalized a proposal to revise regulatory language for rural health centers or federally qualified health centers, mental health visits to include visits furnished using interactive real-time telehealth communications technology. And that change allows both RHCs and FQHCs to report and receive payment for mental health visits furnished via real-time telecommunication technology when the visit takes place in person, including audio-only visits when the beneficiary is not capable of or does not consent to the use of video technology. And additionally, CMS also finalized that an in-person non-telehealth visit must be furnished at least every 12 months for these services. However, there are exceptions as long as the reasons documented in the patient's medical record, and more frequent visits are also allowed under the policy. And again, that's driven by clinical need on a case-by-case basis. So I think we're at a point where we can move into Q&A, but next slide, please. I'm just making sure I didn't forget something. Great. If you have questions of general policy, please send them to our Division of Practitioner Services at cms.hhs.gov or similarly, I'll leave my email in the chat as well so people can reach out directly.
Great. Let's move into the Q&A portion of the webinar. If you do have questions for the presenters, you can go ahead and click on that Q&A icon that shows up at the bottom of your screen, and that'll allow you to enter your questions. So it looks like we do have a few in here already. The first few look like they're for Lindsay. A couple related to licensed professional counselors. So the questions are, will BHI include LPCs? And does the LPC need to be enrolled with Medicare?
Yeah, thanks, Christine. I can take those. So for the question asking, does an LPC need to be enrolled with Medicare? No, they do not. They, in fact, LPCs don't have that option right now because there is no separate statutory benefit category. And so the policy that we finalized that I described in the slides earlier, what it does is currently LPCs can participate in furnishing care to Medicare beneficiaries under Incident 2, where the service is billed by a supervising physician or non-physician practitioner. And so LPCs can already do that now and under direct supervision, and starting January 1st, 2023, the change is that they can do that under general supervision. The other question that Christine just read off asked, will BHI eventually include LPCs as there's a shortage of behavioral health professionals in rural primary care practices? And the answer on that one is actually that they already can. The way that the BHI codes are described and defined is that those are billed Incident 2 as well. And in depending on which BHI code we're talking about, for example, in the psychiatric collaborative care model, there is a behavioral health consultant, and that person could be a clinical social worker, a licensed professional counselor, because those codes are billed by the treating or billing practitioner, in most cases, the primary care physician or practitioner. And so they can already participate in that care described by behavioral health integration. Both those codes that specifically describe the psychiatric collaborative care model and the general BHI codes as well. And I will just note for the new code that we established for 2023, LPCs could participate in that code as well when billed by a clinical psychologist, because they, in their statutory benefit category, they can also supervise others furnishing services incident to their professional service. But for clinical social workers, they would need to just personally perform the service because they don't have that ability in their benefit category. Okay, Christine, do you want me to just move on to the next question, or?
I'll go ahead and read it for you.
Okay.
How is general supervision defined, or where can we find the definition? And does the general supervision change pertain only to behavioral health providers, or is it for use in all incident to billing?
Yeah, so the change that I was describing for 2023, it is specific only to behavioral health services. And we define that pretty broadly in the final rule. To say that it's really any service furnished primarily for the treatment of a mental health diagnosis, including a substance use disorder diagnosis. As for the definitions of, I know we talked a lot about direct supervision versus general supervision, those are defined in our manuals. And I believe there is some discussion of that in the comments and responses in the CY 2023 PFS final rule, but I can tell you now that for direct supervision, the definition there is that the supervising physician or practitioner needs to be located within the office suite at the time that the service is furnished. But with general, they do not have to be located there in the office suite. So that's why we thought that this change really can be a meaningful one in terms of expanding access. I think that covers that question.
All right. The next question says, I'm looking for a little clarification on the incident to consideration in terms of reimbursement for RHCs and FQHCs.
Yeah, this is something that we did hear a lot about in the public comments to the proposed rule. And so in the final rule, we had a response stating that the proposal that was made was specific to physician fee schedule billing, and RHCs and FQHCs do not bill under the physician fee schedule. They have their own separate billing mechanisms. And so we said that we would definitely take this into consideration for future rulemaking as it pertains specifically to RHCs and FQHCs.
All right, and the next question is for Chris. Can tribal health providers perform telehealth care across state lines and for established patients? So if the clinic is located in Michigan and the patient is in Florida for the winter, for example.
So I wanted to address this and forgive that it's a bit of an indirect way, but that's a bit fact specific in the general overview of policies that I provided. Speak specifically to the physician fee schedule. So IHS may be different and there may be certain considerations, but I did want to take the opportunity to underscore that so long as scope of practice and state licensing laws are met, that's sometimes possible, but I didn't want to go too far there. So that question's best directed to someone at IHS, but it's certainly forward about.
Great, thank you. Another question. In an RHC, can the in-person visit for mental health telemedicine be performed by the primary care provider? And are mental health telemedicine costs RHC allowable on the cost report?
For that one, I know we have some colleagues that are joining us on the line who are the experts in policy for rural health clinics. I wondered if any of our colleagues wanted to chime in on that one. And if we don't have the answer right now, we are happy to follow up after the webinar.
Hi, Lindsay. Yes, can we get back to the inquirer on this question? We can follow up with them. After the webinar, they can feel free to also send the question into the RHC resource mailbox at rhc@cms.hhs.gov. And I'll add that resource mailbox in the chat as well, in the Q&A, I'm sorry, as well.
Great. Thanks so much, Michelle.
Sure. Thank you.
All right. Next question is, are there any provisions for pharmacists working under collaborative practice incident to a Medicare provider to provide the behavioral health services?
I think we did not speak to that specifically in this final rule. I think in order to give you the most comprehensive answer, let us dig into that one a little bit and we can get you an answer over email. And that one can be sent to, we had a slide at the end of the presentation with a resource box that is Division of Practitioner Services at cms.hhs.gov.
All right. And just for clarification, can the incident to visit for an LPC be with a primary care MD and not a behavioral health physician?
Yes. The only kind of requirement is that the service that's being furnished is for the primary purpose of treating or diagnosing a mental health condition or a substance use disorder. So yeah, we didn't make any kind of specification about the specialty of that physician or non-physician practitioner who is on the claim form.
All right. If an LPC is in private practice, would they still be able to bill?
That's an interesting question. So I think going back to the point that an LPC cannot independently bill Medicare at this time because they're not able to enroll as a Medicare provider. But to the extent that an LPC is in private practice with a Medicare enrolled physician or non-physician practitioner, then they could participate in that care on an incident to basis.
All right. Another one for you, Lindsay. It says LPCs and LMFTs are not considered a core FQHC provider. In the CY 2023, is there a provision to allow for these two healthcare professionals to be reimbursed similar to what you had previously described?
Right. I think this question is similar to one that came up earlier, which was that the policy we finalized for 2023 was specific to just physician fee schedule billing. But we did respond to public comments to say that we would definitely consider similar changes for future rulemaking.
So Lindsay, do you know whether any state Medicaid plans or waivers have adopted these flexibilities regarding auxiliary personnel?
I don't. Unfortunately, I think the folks on the line today, we are just in the Center for Medicare and we don't have our colleagues from CMCS on the line as well. That's something that we could, I think, try to reach out on and loop in some other colleagues.
All right. For Chris, can we revisit the telephone only billing? Is it discontinued as of January 1st, 2023, or through the 151 days following the end of the PHE?
Yeah, forgive me. I stumbled a little over myself there a little bit in that part of the presentation. So let me clarify. So for any telehealth service that's on the telehealth list for purposes of ongoing treatment, diagnosis of a mental health or substance use disorder,